Welcome, fans of the Justice League universe. My name is Sam.
My name is Nick.
We are two members of the JLU podcast team who enjoy analyzing the DC films from Warner Brothers Studios. You can follow me at @OttandSam on Twitter.
And you can follow me at JLUPodIn. And you can follow the show at JLU Podcast.
In this episode, we're going to talk about scenes 22 and 23 of Justice League. These are two quick scenes where we meet a Russian family, and then we briefly go inside a kind of, you know, nuclear core coolant tower to see Steppenwolf and his horde of parademons. So we're going to do our kind of quick run-through of some points from the scene. So starting off with the Russian family, we have a little musical change where we get kind of a Russian strumming guitar, something like that. To me, that the musical change always kind of sticks out to me almost too much. I know they're trying to go for, like, you know, cultural setting and stuff, but to me it was almost too much. But
oh, they're in Russia!
But the first thing here is just that we see this family and we get a few moments to get a sense of the status quo of the family. Like, what's their arrangement? What do they look like? How are they living their life? That sort of thing. Very briefly. And then that's, of course, going to quickly be, like, upturned by this, you know, huge alien infestation sort of thing. But we see that there's a father with his feet up. There's a mother kind of doing chores around the house. A son tinkering. And we see a daughter, you know, in the foreground. So we've got this nuclear family, and no pun intended.
It's a good set, too. You know, it really tells you a lot about the family. They got the shotgun up on the wall and stuff. Used to defending themselves, probably. I can't imagine that there's much of a police force here in, you know, DC Comics Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm. Like, one thing, I have a few criticisms of this. One is that I think there's some false setups, or, like, some setups that are not carried through later on. So, like, at one point, the mother, you know, the son is working on a radio, tinkering with it and stuff, and the mother's like literally says that thing's never gonna work, or you're never gonna get that thing working. So to me, in a movie, if somebody says you're never gonna get that thing working, it means that later in the movie it's gonna be very important that you get it working and it saves the day, or you get a message, or, you know, something.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I honestly don't remember, does it come back? I mean, I don't think it does.
I don't remember it coming back in any way at all. If I missed it, listeners can feel free to call me out. But I'm like, I've watched this several times, and as far as I know, I don't remember anything about that radio later.
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and admit to the extremely controversial opinion that I don't watch Justice League very often, not as much as I watch Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel.
Right.
For no particular reason.
Yeah, so that's one criticism I have of this kind of setup, you know, like we're meeting the family and that sort of thing. The other one I have is that, you know, they're coming in pretty late in the movie. You know, we're like 50 minutes into the movie or so, probably, like 40-some, 50 minutes. With an entrance that's this late, I'm always kind of not sure as an audience member, okay, how much do I need to care about this family? Because I'm just meeting them for the first time, and we've had 45 minutes of setup before this. So I'm not sure, like, you know, how involved are they going to be in the later plot and stuff like that? And so, you know, they are involved in stuff later, but as it's happening, I'm not sure, like, how central that's going to be or if it's just periphery. And to me, when they're involved later, it's basically just as a periphery sort of thing.
I think including them at this point is just because it goes from them to Steppenwolf, and you're like, oh, wow, those guys are in danger. That's bad. From my understanding, this entire subplot is one of the things that was added into the movie and just wouldn't be in the Snyder Cut, hashtag release a Snyder Cut.
Yeah, I think Zack Snyder explicitly said, like, what Russian family? Like, he's saying, like, I don't know what that Russian family is that you're talking about.
Yeah. With that being said, it makes sense that they're in here. This actually kind of, you know, I was thinking about it, it kind of surprised me. It really does fit in to a recurring theme that you see in Zack Snyder's DC Comics movies that you really don't get in very many comic book movies. You know, you really don't get it in Marvel. For all the things that happen in the Marvel universe that you'd think would, like, profoundly affect the day-to-day life of the average person, nothing seems to have changed since Iron Man announced, since Tony Stark announced that I am Iron Man. Like, where are the people who need prosthetics and they just have robot arms built by Stark Industries? You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, why isn't nanotechnology the standard for medicine now? We never touch on that. Here, in the DC Comics movies, it's not really, that's not what they do, but what they do is they show you how these events immediately affect people. You have Man of Steel, you see Jenny and Perry White and Pete trying to escape the wreckage, and so you see this, you see what's happening from their point of view on the ground. And Batman versus Superman, you get that glimpse of Jack literally praying to God before the building collapses around him. You get the French people and Wonder Woman, you see how the war is affecting them. And here, like, these guys are your stand-in for just the average person. And one thing that I like about them choosing a Russian family is, you know, with our political situation right now, a lot of people sure seem to be interested in making us pissed off at the Russians. And it's really nice to see somebody in a big blockbuster, very American movie humanize regular Russian people. I think that's actually really important and a good thing to see in a movie. So I don't know. I can only be so frustrated with this subplot, because at least it fits the themes, and it's not just like making you care about somebody who's like you. Like, no, I don't recognize these Russian people. They aren't very much, well, they kind of are a lot like me, but I mean, they're Russian, man. And so, it's, hey, I'll take it.
Yeah, I think those are some valid points. Like, even the first time I saw this, and as I've thought about it since then, I always figured the reason that they added in the Russian family was they said, we need to have somebody that's in danger. We need to see somebody who's threatened so that we feel a little bit more risk or a little bit more stakes, you know, of the alien invasion or that sort of thing. I think maybe in earlier versions of the story there were different stakes, but those stakes were getting removed, and so now you had to replace them with a new kind of stakes, and so this Russian family is that. And in general, I think it's a good idea to have somebody human, somebody that we can empathize with, to realize, like, not only is the world getting taken over in an abstract sense, but these parademons and this invasion is going to kill these people who we've seen close up, like we've seen their face and their emotions. So, like, as a concept, I'm okay with it, and I imagine that was, like, the pitch. Like, hey, we need to have some humans, maybe some kids, so that the audience, like, worries about them, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I do, well, later on will be more of a thing. Some of the execution does not impress me. Like, the way that we see them do it, it's like, well, that seems like, so you mentioned Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Jenny about to be crushed, and Perry White, like, grabbing her hand, that, and, like, even Lombard or whatever is there. Like, to me, that execution of the humanity and regular people being affected by the situation was executed so much more powerfully than this Russian family is.
People say that Zack Snyder has no heart. That's one of the most affecting scenes in that movie, just Jenny freaking out. And then, like, then everything stops and it's quiet and it's like, oh my God, like, Superman actually did it. And it just works so well in that scene. Here, like, this family is so far removed from the action. They're just, like, in their house the whole time, and stuff's happening to the house.
Yeah.
So they try to escape, and the Flash rescues them, that they actually join the rest of the plot and kind of synthesize the rest of the movie. And it's just off-putting that it's executed, like you said.
Yeah, I also kind of, at a lot of times, like, even here, but then especially later, I always feel like if they were really in danger, the parademons would be in there and would have killed them. You know, like, if the parademons were really trying to kill them, they would kill them pretty quickly. And it's so, instead, it just seems like they're always just like, danger is near me, but, like, yeah, but you're not actually in danger, because if you were, you would be dead real quick.
Yeah, right.
So it's always this kind of, like, pseudo danger that I never really feel it or believe it. But I know that I know what they were going for, and you made some good points about it, which I will grant them that. I try to be pretty open-minded about stuff like that.
That's what I mean. Like, broad strokes makes perfect sense. It's kind of a good decision to put him in the movie. Execution,
Yeah, that's probably the best
it's
way to
basically
say it.
Basically, like, this movie in a nutshell, frankly.
Yeah. The last thing we wanted to say about this quick little scene is just the setting of a fictionalized version of Chernobyl, kind of. You know, it's not exactly the same, but they're going for that idea of, you know, a Russian or an Eastern European, you know, area that has had some nuclear fallout, and so the people living there are, you know, they're kind of scraping by with what they can, but it's an area that a lot of people who had means would not choose to live there.
It's free real estate.
Yeah, and I like that as broadening out the world, you know, like, we've been to Themyscira, we've been to Atlantis, we've, you know, been around the United States, London, and now Russia. So I do like that we're going to different parts of the globe.
Yeah, this is a global story. It's not just about, one place. This is about everyone. And it's nice to see everyone in the world not represented by New York City.
All right, so let's go on into scene 23. So we know from just, a few minutes ago that Steppenwolf got the mother box from Atlantis, so he now has two out of the three. And so we're now seeing, like, where is he taking those? Now that he's recovered it and boomed out of Atlantis, where is he going? And so we go into this, coolant tower, nuclear reactor tower. We go in there and we see these swarms of parademons and stuff. But the first thing we wanted to talk about here was this idea of Steppenwolf saying, "I see why you waited to summon me." And so this idea of there's this mother that he's talking to, and she has called him back to Earth, and that idea of like the timing being just right. And he says, "The world's in terror, now that the Kryptonian died." So this timeliness of why he came back now.
Yeah, I really wish I had gone back in preparation for this episode to do more research about mother boxes, because they're kind of a blind spot in my DC Comics knowledge. It's interesting that these mother boxes are evil, I guess, and they really want to help out Darkseid and Apocalypse. So I wonder what that's about. I wonder if there's not a bigger thing about maybe this is what any mother box wants to do. I don't know. It's I don't really
Yeah.
know.
Yeah, and as far as I know, this idea of talking to quote unquote mother, I think is new to the movie, or at least, in the comic. I've read, different eras of comics with the New Gods and that sort of thing. And I don't ever remember there being this like mother thing that's kind of behind or in or through the boxes. I've always just thought of the mother boxes themselves, yeah.
Yeah, the mother box is more of like a thinking computer. I mean, it's like it's in modern terms, you just say it's God's iPhone. It's interesting that all the bad guys, not all of them, but a lot of the bad guys in these movies are very concerned with and interested in transforming the Earth into something else. That's really seems to be a recurring point. I haven't really figured out why that's so damn important. The overall themes of this series, but that's what Man of Steel's about, that's what Suicide Squad's about, that's what Wonder Woman's about, and that's what this movie's about. So it's curious.
Yeah, we'll have to think about that a bit more as they get farther along in the terraforming sort of thing. But here, the thing that I like about it is that it does match with scene three, where we had the world without Superman, and it was communicated very powerfully that the world is emotionally dealing with the loss of Superman, that they kind of realize he was this beacon of hope and that he was this good guy, but they kind of realized it now that he was gone. And so there's sadness, there's terror, there's emboldened criminals, like that sort of thing. And I like this connection here where Steppenwolf's saying, like, okay, that is why Earth is like ripe for the picking now. It's splintered and it has, factions and people are, partisan divides and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of anger and hatred instead of love and togetherness. And so that's why he's there to take advantage of it. And that ties into a theme and ties into the next part that we wanted to talk about, which is Steppenwolf's motivation. So obviously, in a small, narrow sense, his motivation is he wants to find the third mother box. He has two out of three and he wants the last one. And he says, we need to go find the third one. But in a more personal sense, he wants to prove himself successful at taking over Earth so that it ends his exile and he can join the New Gods. But he sees an opening to do this, and Mother sees an opening to do this because of the divisions. And so that goes right to, I think, one of the main themes of Justice League, which is that if you allow yourself or your community to get splintered and divided, that you are actually weakening yourself and you're allowing yourself to be violated or to be invaded in metaphorical ways and things like that.
Yes.
And I think the movie makes the point that, if we come together, we are actually stronger and more resilient if we collaborate with each other.
There's a lot of people, especially from my political stripe, who like to criticize superhero movies as like a sort of power fantasy, or more often, I actually see this a lot. We want somebody to come save us, And that's what these stories are about. Somebody like just solving all our problems magically so we don't have to actually get up and take direct action and fix things ourselves. And I disagree. You know, I read these movies as, you know, like you just said, so often the plot is how important it is for us to come together and work together and take direct action collectively. You know, the Justice League isn't as strong. It's stronger than the sum of its parts, and its parts are incredible. And that goes for, like, you know, your Avengers, your X-Men, all those, you know, so many teams. And it seems to be, yeah, it's just a recurring theme that if you have these powers, you need to use them to help other people.
Yeah, and look for others that complement your powers. You know,
Yeah.
like if you have certain skills and things you can contribute, find other people that can do other things, and then together you can do even more, you know. It's a simple idea, but it's I think works well in this story, and it's fitting for a Justice League kind of story.
My dad's a firefighter, and when I was a kid, there was a firefighter on his department who was this very petite, small woman. I was just like, I was a kid. I wasn't a jerk about it, but I was just like, what's her job? Like, why? Yeah, you're used to big, strong firefighters. And he's just like, Nick, who do you think, like, crawls into wrecked cars and, you know, confined spaces in buildings? It's like, oh, yeah, like, everybody can contribute something. Everybody can help. That's the power of a superhero story, man. It's beautiful.
And he also returns to this idea of power. And so, like, I think that this idea of isolation and separation is a weakness, and the movie says that you're stronger together. But then he also talks about this, like, overwhelming power. Like, he kind of talked about it on Themyscira, I think, as well. You know, like, I'm, you know, if there's this power coming, you're not going to be able to stop it. And he flicks the arrow away and stuff. And here he says something like, you know, this power will cleanse the world. The power of the unity, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's this kind of like negative, destructive power. But, you know, through collaboration and love and coming together and stuff, you can have a creative, like positive kind of power.
If you look at, like, Zod and Ares, Zod especially is very clear what he wants, and what he wants isn't that bad. The same with, like, Thanos in Avengers. Like, he's kind of going about it the wrong way, which is the real point. The real point is that, you know, if you want to change the world for the better, there's a right way and there's a wrong way to do it. And both of those guys are absolutely going about it the wrong way. But what they want is relatively good. Zod just wants his civilization back. He just wants his people and his culture back. That's completely understandable. But erasing another culture in order to do it is just beyond the pale and totally unacceptable. Ares, just wants the he well, he says he just wants the Earth to be, like, nice and normal again without people wrecking it. And frankly, he has a point. Same with Orm. But what's so frightening about Steppenwolf and the Dark Side is they're so insanely nihilistic. They just want this just so they can have it. There's no indication of that in this movie, but I mean, in the comics, like, it's really just about just having that power, having all that territory and all that control, just so that you can be in charge. And it doesn't matter what else happens. And that's terrifying. And we see a lot of that in the real world. I can think of a few examples without having to try very hard. Just wanting power for the sake of power. And I would have loved to see where they were going to go with that.
Yeah, so like if you're trying to accumulate power because you really want to make a positive difference and you want to change things that you see as injustices or that sort of thing, yeah, that seems very different from I'm trying to gather power because isn't it awesome to have lots of power and like and I can do what I want to do and that sort of thing. It seems so different, like a totally different motivation for climbing the power ladder, you know. Yeah, lots to think about, and I do think that the movie gives some good fodder. It's one of the reasons that I've said and I will continue to say that I actually like this movie, Justice League. It's just, you know, it's hard to watch it when you think about what could have been a sequel to BVS or what could have been like Zack Snyder's vision. So if you really just if you go down the mental pathway of thinking about what it could have been or what it should have been, quote unquote, that's very painful.
Yeah, in
But
a
if
vacuum, this movie's fine. It's competently put together. You know,
Yeah,
it tells a pretty good story. There's some great moments.
it has some good scenes, it has some good themes, it has a few flaws that, you know, on its own, but Yeah, I can watch this movie and enjoy it. I can watch it with my kids and we enjoy lots of parts of it. It has good stuff going for it, which I know sounds weird to say that because I'm a huge BVS fan and Man of Steel fan. But to me it's kind of this two separate questions. It's as a conclusion to the trilogy, it stinks, but as a movie, I find quite a few things that I can like about it.
Superman turning and seeing the Flash running at him is worth literally everything. Okay, fine. They took it away from Zack Snyder and they butchered it and they made it into an almost unrecognizable movie. Fine. But did you see the part where Superman sees the Flash running at him and turns his head? I'll, fine.
Yeah, and there's some action scenes that Zack Snyder directed that remain intact. They maybe were reduced in time and size, but there's definitely some parts where you're like, oh, Zack Snyder like directed and put together that action sequence and it works well. And that's the last thing I want to say about this scene. There's no action sequence here, but we get a big location preview. Like, so you know, we see Steppenwolf, we see the Unity, what the Mother Boxers are going, and we see the parademons around, and we see a unique setting, you know, inside this coolant tower and stuff, and in this, you know, desolated area in Russia or, you know, Eastern Europe. And so, as a movie watcher, you're sort of like, okay, this is going to be a setting where some stuff is going to go down in Act Three, and it definitely does. And the setting is incorporated into the battle and that sort of thing. So, you know, this is a good job of let the audience get a glimpse of this location that's going to become, you know, hugely important later on in the movie. So that is fun to see, and it builds the anticipation for that Act Three that will come later. So yeah, that's good to see. And then there is one final piece of dialogue that we should probably mention. Right as the parademons are flying out to look for the mother box, we have this line for Darkseid.
It's just interesting that he mentions the new gods, and I don't know, nothing beyond. I wonder where they were gonna go with that, you know. He says rejoin the new gods. He doesn't say rejoin Darkseid. I wonder what that dynamic is like in this universe. You know what I mean? Or if they're a pantheon, in a lot of pantheons, like the sort of like bad god isn't necessarily removed from the other gods. So I wonder if I wonder if. Maybe Darkseid like actually has a natural role to play in this world and really belongs where he is. Because in the comics it seems to be more of a balance of light and dark, but the concept of light and dark are more, God, I don't know, Western, where it's like literally just good and evil, as opposed to other concepts of light and dark, like your Star Wars concept, where it's like life and good and energy and all that. Versus death and all of that, where death serves a purpose and is important to life. That isn't just this nihilistic black hole of nothing and evil. Sometimes it's good for something to die. You know, just the fact that you are going to die makes your life that much better and more interesting. So I wonder, I don't know, I just wonder what that means, rejoin the new gods. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting to think about. And like the relationship between Steppenwolf and Darkseid to me is very intriguing. That's one critique I have of the film, even on its own, was I would have liked more development of the relationship between Steppenwolf and Darkseid instead of just this quick mention of it.
They did cast Darkseid in this movie, and he
Yeah,
did
yeah.
show. So who knows?
Yeah. And hopefully we're still going to get a New Gods film from Ava DuVernay, you know, eventually. As far as I know, that's still, you know, in pre-production sort of thing. But I think that's good enough for this particular scene right now. It's really just setting the stage for some stuff that's going to happen later, so we'll be able to talk about it again in the future. But we want to thank all of our listeners for your support of the show and for listening to this episode. And we especially want to thank our patrons who support the show through patreon.com/JLUpodcast. And that is where we are also doing our Man of Steel analysis scene by scene. So that one is a lot of fun as well. You can check us out on Patreon if you want to do that. But thanks so much for being here. And Nick, thanks so much for talking with me about these scenes.
Thank you, Sam.